Hey everyone, and welcome to Cold-Blooded Conversations. I am your host, Nathan, and today we are going to be chatting with Jim Harrison and Kristen Wiley of the Kentucky Reptile Zoo, one of the country's largest venom extraction facilities. And we're going to be discussing some of Jim's bites, we're going to be discussing their histories, and also what snake venom is being used for in the medical field. But the first question I ask everyone, Jim, how did you get involved in reptiles?
I've been doing it since I was six. I'm 66, and I've been doing it since I was six. I caught a garter snake when I was six, and I saw how the adults all freaked out. So I needed to understand more. So my dad started buying me books. My dad played semi-pro baseball, so we traveled through the South. So anything that moved, I was catching it. So he wanted to make sure I knew what was venomous and what wasn't. By the time I was 12, I was reading on college level in herpetology around venoms and venomous snakes. And then when I turned 17, I started extracting venom. I graduated high school early, and I started extracting venom for a friend of mine. Dr. Sherman Mentons hooked me up with a gentleman who was doing research with king cobra venom. So they were importing them at the time, and they were bringing them from the Siam Snake Park, which is now Thailand. And you can't get anything out of there. But this was back in the 70s. And we were bringing kings, and they wouldn't last 6 months. So I started doing slow deworming and everything else and started breeding them. And I've been breeding kings for 49 years now.
So what got you specifically interested in venom extraction and venom research?
The fact that it could help people as much as hurt people got me interested in the venoms and the components. I mean, snake venom for a long time has been known as something either, you know, from a homeopathic, which I don't believe in, sorry, but to actual research. I mean, the stuff that Butantan did, and I've had a lot of experience with Butantan in Brazil, and then the stuff that was done in by Pasteur Institute, and stuff like that, it just got me more and more interested. But Dr. Menton, he would tell me when I was screwing up and when I was doing okay. So I was willing to listen to him. And I don't know what he saw in me other than I'm very focused most of the time, except when I'm talking. But I'm pretty focused most of the time. So,
Kristen, do you agree with that? Yes.
Yeah.
I think I was going to, the only thing I would add to that is I think really Dr. Menton had a lot to do with the fact that you extracted.
Right.
Like, I don't know. Would you have ever actually started if he hadn't?
I was a fan. Yeah.
Or who knows?
He was very realistic about it. And I hear all the time people think they're going to make liquid gold and all this stuff. I've never taken a salary from venom. So most of the money goes back into the animals and to the people I have working the animals. So I've never taken a salary from the venom. I've done other things to pay my way.
So Kristen, from the wife's standpoint, obviously you're used to it now, but how did you get into reptiles and how do you feel being the wife to Jim with doing what he does and the level of danger that's involved? How do you feel about it from the partner's standpoint?
Well, so part A, I got interested in reptiles actually in college. I was kind of all animals, any animals as a kid. I still am really like, I like everything. I'm not too, except primates. But I always, you know, liked everything. And then I also had a professor who was just wonderful and helped me, you know, let me hang out around the animals he had in his office and stuff like that. So that's kind of how I got into it. And then I did an internship at Cleveland Zoo with aquatic turtles in the county park system around Cleveland, and then came here as an internship and never left, basically. So some of the venomous stuff is really kind of an accident. Like I didn't have a specific interest in venomous snakes, though. It wasn't like, oh, I knew I wanted to work with venomous snakes when I was a kid or even in college. But you know, since that's what's here for the most part, I started getting interested in them because obviously they're very interesting. So I don't know. I think as far as that goes, I just kind of one thing led to another as far as the work and the animals and stuff.
Her professor was a friend of mine, Marty
Yeah, right.
Rosenberg. I don't know if you guys remember Marty Rosenberg, but you're kind of young. But Marty Rosenberg was a friend, and he did Northern Ohio Herp Association
Association,
Herpetology.
yeah.
So he was a friend, and he referred her. She also had gotten a corn snake from, I had given a bunch of okatees away because at one point when I was younger, I was
Oh, I
breeding,
forgot about that.
I was
And
breeding 100 female okatee corn snakes a year and getting $5 a baby wholesale out. And I gave them to a friend of mine, oh man,
Rob Zirkle.
Rob Zirkle and Amy Zirkle. Gosh, I feel bad. Too many head blows. But they sold her the corn snake. So when she came down here, the Okeetee corn snake came back. So
Yeah,
it
kind of.
traveled back with her.
We had to figure it out, but
And
yeah, that's kind of funny.
it got used as an educational snake for a while.
Yeah.
So how did you guys meet?
Here.
Here at the end, she came out as an intern,
Yeah.
and then she decided to put up with me and stay. I actually proposed to her on National Geographic while hunting the St. Lucian pit viper, the fertilance, one of the true fertilances, Bothrops caribeus. We're the only place legally allowed off the island to possess them. And we keep in a surety population, and we have like what 60 some right now, some ungodly
I
number.
don't think it's quite that many
Okay,
now, but yeah,
yeah.
we breed them and try not to breed too many, but it's a little bit hard because they're big Bothrops, big pit vipers, so they have a lot of babies at one time.
The average on the island that we were collecting and stuff, the females were averaging anywhere from 6 to 8 feet. And their head was as big as my hand. So they're big
They're
animals.
big.
And one big female gave dry weight 1,000 milligrams in 1 gram in one.
So, do you guys have an actual inventory of how many snakes you actually have?
We do have an actual inventory now, but I'd have to bring it up on Google Drive to find it. If you want to give me a second, I'll work on that while we're
Okay. So while you do that, Jim, how did the zoo and the whole operation get
Well,
started?
I was extracting when I was a police officer. I had a lab in my house. I had an upstairs, which was the lab, and I lived in the ba downstairs, and then the basement was the rodent area. So I was, and then in my garage was my karate school. So I got ran over by a stolen car, and that's the first time I died. And I had a blood clot pass through my heart and stop my heart. I was 26 years old. So I was kind of forced into a early retirement. So I got a trailer and I did carnivals for a while and fairs, which was enlightening of people in general. I ran into good carnies, I ran into bad carnies. So it was an interesting thing. So I did that for about a year, 2 years, and then I came down here and I met a gentleman who had a building, an old restaurant at Natural Bridge, and his family had been historically here for the longest time. And he gave me the building for free for a year. And I slept on a cement floor in a back in a sleeping bag. And the outside was, I just put Neodesha cages out. I did whatever I had because I had no funding. And I started out charging $1 for people to come through and stuff. It was just a simple place, but we're now going on 35 years here. And we've expanded to the collection we have on display now, which, it's one of the larger venomous displays in the United States, not the largest that we know, because I haven't been to every one of them. I know Terry Phillips out at Reptile Gardens and them have a large one. As far as venom labs, I think we're probably one of the larger in the world. But like I said, I haven't been to all of them. So there's that whole thing about mine's bigger than yours is a bunch of crap. It's how well you do with it. I was, yeah. Well, what I wanted to do was get away from the old days. In the old days, they brought the animals in and they lived 6 months. They shoved a tube down her throat, force fed them, they rolled over dead. They thought they were successful. But that's not good science and it's not humane. So I started breeding stuff. I started getting bloodlines and I kept track of stuff. And now I have snakes that have been on the venom production line over 30 years. Our oldest animal just died the summer before last. It was 40, it was 49 years old. It was great. It was a Bungarus multisynctus. So, and then my oldest king lived to be over 38. One we have right now, the oldest one is Puppy, and Puppy's like 28 or 29 now. I can't remember. Again,
Sorry, I'm adding.
I use this as a joke, but I was a professional kickboxer. I fought PKA. I fought WKA. I was never any good at it. I was just like preliminary fighter, but I took a few head blows. So I always refer to when I can't remember something. Hopefully, I'm not getting CTE, but those have led to me having my knees replaced, my hips replaced, and just recently, the last 4 months, I had my shoulders replaced.
So, do you still have that area at your facility where people can come in and watch the actual extractions as you do them?
Yeah, you can watch us extract. It's usually at 1 o'clock on days. As long as I'm healthy, we do it. When I had my shoulders replaced, I had one sling in for 6 weeks. As soon as the sling came off, well, actually before that sling came off, my l left hand was workable. I was extracting and having her pin them for me. So,
We're between 1,100 and 1,200 individual. Yeah, I think we have like 120-ish species, something like that.
Wow.
So I mean, that's including like
So,
non-venomous things too,
yeah, but we don't have a whole lot of
but
non-venom.
there's not there's not venomous.
So,
it's kind of safe to say that the larger part of your operation is behind the scenes with the snakes you use for venom extraction, and the zoo is totally awesome, but it's probably the smaller
Yeah,
part.
that's one of the other reasons, besides the fact I wanted to educate people that it could be done better, is that I didn't want people thinking we were doing this something nefarious. Because if you go behind closed doors, the first thing that comes out is, people start making stories up, and they still do. I mean, there's people tell all kinds of stories
But at
about,
least people can come and
I
ask us
mean, I have
directly.
people tell me all the time they milked snakes for me and not me directly because they don't know it's me. But then,
No, they say they did it for you, to you, so they clearly
to
did
me,
it.
they didn't because they don't
I've
recognize
had
me.
several people in the last maybe 2 or 3 years, more so than ever before, that said they used to work here. And I was like, oh, how long ago? And then they'd be like, oh, I like 10 years. And I was like, well, I've been here for 26 now, so I don't know who you are. So it's
Yeah,
odd.
it is odd, but you guys get it too in any of the forums and stuff. Everybody wants to say something, but the sad thing about it is that you don't want to really call them out because maybe they did, maybe they didn't, maybe did it wrong. Who knows? But this is the way we do it now. There's something mentally
Sounds
about
very
people wanting
familiar.
to be able to tell stories, and there's people that I just off the head, top of my head, I used to do those trailers and stuff, and I was at a mall, and I had been there the year before, and I came back, and a guy was telling me the story that there was a guy with snakes there the year before, and they found him dead in his truck, and I'm like, Sh did they? I think I'd be smelling by now, but I get all the time people think I'm dead, and I've been dead, or my heart has stopped at least four times, once from a human and three times from snake bite.
So, how many extractions do you do on average a day? Because I follow you guys
Yeah, right
obviously on the
now,
social
not a lot.
media.
Yeah, it varies a lot. So during the busy time of year, and if Jim's like totally healthy and feeling good, I mean, and if the buildings are kind of stacked, so the full ones are within a few days of each other, he can push over 1,000 a week, but that's really only during those busiest times. So depending on the circumstances, it could be a lot less than that. Probably average is I don't know, a hundred or two a week, maybe. Taking out,
Yeah.
like, it depends on the animal. So like if there's a group of animals that we have 100 of, he typically does all of them at once. But also, if we have a group of animals that there are five of, that might be all he does that day.
Yeah.
So
I used to average like 600 to 1,000 extractions a week. And, with old age and slowing down a little bit, and having all the surgeries and stuff, I had to slow down a little bit. So I am not back up. One of the few times, well, she gets mad at me other times, but one of the few times she ever got mad at me about extracting was when we had 1,000 Malayan pit vipers that came from a lab in Germany, and they were getting out of the ANCRAD business at the time, stroke medicine, and they sent them to us. And they sent some to Bill Haast. And they sent us 1,000. And I did 1,000 of them in 4 hours. And that made her.
that was a lot.
You guys probably are familiar with them. Everybody refers to them as little landmines, but they're also called the axe snake because if they bite you, necrosis is horrible. And the antisense really doesn't do anything for necrosis.
So at this point in your career, you mentioned you're getting up there in years and such. Are you guys preparing anyone to take over the business once you've decided to call it quits?
Well, we're working on that. Here's the thing. There's a fine medium. It's just like when I was in the martial arts, or still in the martial arts. When somebody wants to do it so bad and they think they're going to be Bruce Lee, or they think they're going to be, Mortal Kombat or some crap like that, they come in with the idea that it's just a game. And that attitude's dangerous. And you're not going to last long. So I'm looking for people that are focused, people who maybe don't even really want to do it, and then they decide they do want to do it after they've been here for a while. So that's kind of how I do it. It's like, when I was a white belt, we mopped the floors. We mopped the floors before we were allowed to do any studies.
It's not so much that they have to like want to mop a lot of
Right,
floors,
right.
though
They got to
pretty
show
much
me
if
discipline.
you want to work with animals, you're going to have to clean,
Yeah.
obviously. But it's more that they can see that all aspects of the operation are necessary for the venom production to happen and to have an appreciation for all of that. Yeah, like it's not only about can you pick up a cobra, it's about all of the other parts that go into it.
Well,
And that somebody has to, people who are going to be, I don't know what the word is, disciplined enough, I think is the word, to extract properly are going to also understand that all of those things are just as important.
you can't pay attention to the camera, and you can't be a social
Right.
influencer, because if that's all you're interested in, your 15 minutes of fame will be gone in a short period of
Yeah.
time, because you're going to get bit eventually. And if you do the numbers I do, you slack off at all, you're going to be either dead or you're going to be missing body parts. And by the way, this finger is not from a snake bite. I get it all the time. I dropped 375 pounds on this while I was powerlifting with a cheap, I won't say the name of the bench, but it's a very famous person who was, Arnold Schwarzenegger was one of his proteges. And I dropped the weights on my finger and crushed the finger. They put a plastic
Oh my
joint
God.
in, and while I was punching the bag, I broke the plastic joint and I could spin my finger around. They wanted to fuse it, but I would figured I'd stick it in something's mouth. So what I did was I had them amputated and I had it in a bottle. That bottle went all over the United States, people getting pictures with it, because one of our PhD students that came here decided to be a clown, and he started sending me pictures in the mail with my fingerprint on the back saying, or his fingerprint on the back saying, "Wish we were still attached." It ended up at Anne Rice's Halloween party and it disappeared there. So it's probably in somebody's necklace.
So it's safe to say that you've probably handled hundreds of thousands of snakes in your career.
I get to ask that all the time. I can't really respond to that because I have no idea. I mean, I've had thousands of, I was doing thousands of extractions when I was 17, So, I mean, in a year, that would be.
I mean, it's easily in the hundreds of thousands for him, and I'm sure I'm also in the hundreds of thousands at least just
And
working
you
with
hear
him.
people say it's a numbers game. It's a numbers game if you're taking risk. And I try to take a calculated risk, but it's still a risk because I have to be close enough to the animal that it can strike. But the biggest part of extractions is release, because for a split second, you're too close to the snake.
So, in hundreds of thousands of times, you have been bit 15 times. We talked about that a little earlier. So, do you want to discuss just a couple of the most notable?
Yeah, sure. Do you guys know any of them? Anyone that you want to specifically know about? Yeah, I've been on life support 7 times. I've had my heart stop 3 times from snake bite. One of those times, two stopped in one bite. My heart stopped twice in one bite. That was the Cape Cobra in Najanibia. And I had just gone back from Brazil. And a Brazil researcher at the Instituto Butantan wanted a sample of Nivea venom. So I was milking the Nivea and I pulled one out and I wasn't paying attention or I wasn't focused enough. I didn't notice it crawled through water. And I got it on the receptacle a bit. But then when I went to release it, it slipped and put one fang in my thumb. And I immediately, at that time, my hands weren't as busted up as they are now from everything else. But I started the IV and then I started slowly infusing the anti-serum and then the South African polyvalent. And I got to the first hospital and they put me on a helicopter to send me to UK, the larger hospital. And when I was on the helicopter, somehow the IV got pulled out. So I was looking up at my heart rate, which at the time was, I was running a lot. So it was normally like 60, this, something like 60, 65, but it was going to 30, which below 30, you start defibrillating. And I looked at the nurse that was on the chopper and I said, I'm not getting the anti-serum. You're going to have to push adrenaline and then push 5 vials of anti-venom, or I'm going to be dead before we land. And she goes, well, I can't do that because I don't have a doctor's orders. So I didn't know where we were in the flight. And we landed right then. They rolled me off. The doctor knew me, looked down at me and says, what do I do, Jim? Now, that's the last thing I remember before I went into. They put me on life support and I had an external pacemaker on me. There's a cardiotoxin that's very strong in a lot of the cobra venoms. And this is one that had a very strong one also. But I had descending paralysis. I couldn't open my eyes. And that was the probably one of the worst ones. The most recent worst one was in 2015. And that was a South American rattlesnake. I had run up a tube. And we use bleach and ammonia, not simultaneously,
Well, we don't
but
use ammonia anymore,
we
but at
don't
the
use any
time we
ammonia.
were,
Yeah, at the time we were using ammonia, but we use anything that will take care of, now we use hydrogen peroxide, but anything that would take care of any of the diseases that we knew of at the time. So that would make the plastic brittle after a while. And normally I would check it. Well, I didn't check that day and it went up the tube. It was about a 4 foot. Crotalus durissus terrificus, and it flung sideways and hit me with one fang in the wrist.
So
And
you're really leaving out what actually happened.
but
The snake itself broke the tube.
yeah.
So if you're familiar with durissus, they tend to have a very strong, heavy body. And I wasn't watching it, but my understanding from the explanation that I got is that the snake did that big, like, body flex movement and cracked it. And then when it went to strike, it was able to get its head
It
out.
basically
So,
was so brittle it just broke.
yeah.
And so I put the snake back. I called the two employees because she wasn't here at the time. She was down, was going to go visit one of her relatives. So she to fly to Maryland, she has to fly to Atlanta from Kentucky. So I still don't understand that, but that's the way it is. So she's in Atlanta. They put me in the car, Kat, our lead keeper, and we put the anti-serum in the car. I don't remember anything about the car ride. All she told me was I slumped over on top of her. I knew I was having descending paralysis because I couldn't open my eyes. I had ptosis. And then when she met up with the ambulance, the ambulance people and Kat told me I woke up, told them how to reconstitute the antivenom, to intubate me, and how much to give. I don't remember anything. I woke up 24, 8 or 24 hours later. I can't remember on that one.
No, it was the same day because it was when I got there.
Okay. When
So
she
it's
got there,
like
they were extubating me
7 or 8 hours,
they
something
were
like that.
extubating me. But my muscle rhabdomyolysis is very common in pterygius. So I was having my breakdown of muscle. So I had to be kept in to make sure my kidneys didn't go into failure. And I woke up and my face was big and puffy. And I thought, oh man, I had an allergic reaction to the antivenom. And then I looked up and there's this huge bag of saline. And they're just pumping me with fluids. They're just pumping me with fluids to keep my kidneys working. So that was one of the worst ones. The Bothrop's bite did the most damage, and it's damage you can't see. I got bit in the wrist, and it's on our YouTube video. There's like three things from back at 12, 13 years ago was that when that happened. I was running the Bothrop's up a tube, and I had it like 6 inches away from its head. A 3 foot Bothrop's, I had a 3 foot tube and 6 inches away from it. It overextended and put both fangs in my wrist. It went all the way over it. So I don't, snakes don't read books. They don't know how they're supposed to behave. So, you have to be prepared for anything. So I pulled it off my wrist. I put it back in the cage, called her. Actually, you'll hear me talking about it in the video. And then we get to the first hospital. They start some anti-serum. They did it actually wrong. They decided to not put it in through the saline bag. They put it directly in me.
I think
And
they were trying to be too good to us because they know who we are. We have a relationship with them. And so we were like, "Oh, this is a really, big deal, this bite." And they were like, "Okay." And
So
so they like
they gave me
mainlined the
five vials. Yeah, they
antivenom.
gave me five vials. And our doctor friend Dan Kyler, who's one of the top tox guys, he's one of our consultants. He goes, "You must have the constitution of a horse." I didn't have an allergic
You
reaction
did.
to it.
It was amazing.
So, but then they got me to the first hospital or to the second hospital, which was UK, and they had my hand on a pillow and the fan was blowing and it felt like somebody was driving nails through my hand. And it was that painful. So my blood pressure was going up and they said, "Well, we got to give you pain meds." Normally I don't take pain meds because I want to be lucid. So they said, "We got to give it to you. You're going to possibly stroke." So they gave me morphine. The first time in my whole life I've ever gotten morphine. I've been run over by cars and everything else. Never got morphine. Felt fantastic. Wasn't feeling pain. They put me on the elevator to take me up to ICU. I went into respiratory arrest. They had to give me Narcan. I kicked the bottom of the bed off, bit down and broke two of my teeth. And then when
Because
I,
of pain.
from the pain, and then,
It's like
Narcan,
not really just the Narcan.
the Narcan brings the pain. No, the Narcan brings the pain back really quick. I've given Narcan before, so I know what it does. But that was a bad bite. And then there's pictures, I think way, way back of my hand after what, 4 years? All this, I had microfractures from boxing
Well,
and
you've
kickboxing.
left out a chunk of it too.
What? Just
The
the end?
abscesses.
Oh, the abscesses. I forgot about
You
that.
didn't say anything about
Yeah.
it.
Usually
This
with
is.
Bothrops, and hopefully you never have to have this happens to any of you guys, but Bothrops bites 8 days out from the bite, you can have not what's called reoccurrence. You can't have that too with some of the antihistamines. We just didn't know what they were at the time. But you can have wraparound abscessing that'll just occur out of, it'll look like everything's fine. You don't have anything nasty looking. You think it's all over. All of a sudden, there'll be like a wraparound swelling occur in the bite area. And that's what happened with me. So we went up to a hand surgeon friend of ours. They did an MRI and they're like, you got abscesses. We got to go in there now. You might lose your hand. So they went in and they put gauze, and this is also in the snake bite thing, them pulling the gauze out of my hand. It's actually 3 days or 4 days after the first time they pulled the gauze out. First time they pulled the gauze out, they pulled out like 3 feet of gauze out of my hand, and they did it with an oxycodone because they couldn't give me morphine. And I will tell you that I would confess to anything under torture. That turned my eyes, rolled back in my head. That's how bad it hurt. So that abscess finally healed up, but I had little microfractures in my hand, and we were keeping track of everything. And as I went along, all those started fusing, and then it fused down into my wrist. So this is my wrist flexion. That's
Oh, there
it.
you go.
And they said the hand would be non-functional. I would never be able to use it again. And I started doing exercises and being a normal, not always paying attention to what I should do and doing what I think I should do. And I was able, now I can use chopsticks and stuff like
You also
that.
had a good therapist.
And I had a good
Yeah.
therapist too, yeah. But I pushed it to where it worked out to where I was functional. But all this in here is fused. If you look at an X-ray of my hand, it doesn't look like a normal hand. It looks like all the bones are fused. And they think, because they've never, it's a one out, they don't have a whole lot of people to compare it to. They think it's that the calcium channels were exacerbated by the venom. And because I had those microfractures, that's where it healed. And I know
Like it
from,
got too excited
right, you got too excited. And,
for
you
lack of
know,
a scientific
yeah,
explanation.
and in kickboxing, we found that like you get little microfractures in your shin, and people think, well, where the fracture heals, it's great. It breaks above it. You know, the next time you come around and kick like Anderson Silva did, and the leg breaks. So those little microfractures are not good. They don't make you tougher, they make you weaker. So I have to be very careful with my hands.
So, which species of bull throps
That
was
was
that?
Bothrops atrox. It was a animal from
Okay.
Suriname. The venom is used in blood clotting research and other stuff like that. So we still have a project with that. I think we got what 30 or 40 Bothrops atrox.
Well, we have about 30 adults, and then we have, I don't know, 20 babies, or
Yeah.
we just, well, no, we have 40 babies. We just had
Well,
20 of them born, but that's from a different bloodline than Suriname.
the Colombian animal that people call colombiensis is not really colombiensis. It's not really been, there's not enough DNA to prove it is. So Wolfgang Wusser says to keep it as Atrox. So that's what we do. We follow what Atrox says. Oh, those are the babies.
That's one of the babies
Yeah.
from like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
They're pretty
And
cute.
their venom, the Colombian species of Atrox, their venom is much different than the Atrox from Suriname and Ghana.
Yeah. There's some
So
geographic
there's
variation going
very,
on
yeah,
there.
there's just a geographic variation. So some of the researchers we work with want the ones from Colombia, and some of them want the ones from Suriname.
Yeah.
Well, everyone, that is it for this episode of Cold Blooded Conversations. Be sure to join us next week as we will be back for part two with Jim and Kristen of the Kentucky Reptile Zoo. And we're going to start discussing some of the projects they're involved in and what snake venoms are being used for in the medical field. There will be links in the description so you can view the videos that they've referenced, especially the snake bites. So until next time, we'll see you later.